General Motors had some good news to report yesterday. It's bringing back 1,200 jobs at a plant near Youngstown, Ohio. Workers there will assemble one of GM's most strategically important cars. From member station WKSU, Amanda Rabinowitz reports.
GM President Mark Royce drove his Chevrolet Cruze from Detroit to Lordstown, Ohio yesterday, bringing word that the plant will rehire a full shift of laid-off workers to make the fuel-efficient Cruze due out later this year. It puts Lordstown back to round-the-clock production after cutting two shifts and nearly 3,000 jobs last year. Roy says the Cruze will be GM's key product for competing in the small car market.
Every one of our competitors that this car goes up against today, it just thumps. And then we still beat the cars of what we think is going to happen in those competition for the next 5 years. So this car is absolutely segment busting here in North America.
But auto industry analyst Michelle Krebs of Edmunds.com says putting all of GM's hopes into one car launch is a risky strategy.
It's a small car that's got to do a big job for General Motors. It's going up against some products by Ford that are doing very well or are very promising. And it's going against strong products like the Toyota Corolla and the Honda Civic.
U.S. production of the Cruze was delayed for 4 months after the company decided it needed to upgrade the automatic transmission. The first Cruze is expected to be in dealer showrooms this fall. For NPR News, I'm Amanda Rabinowitz in Kent, Ohio.
NPR's business news starts with somber words from the chairman of the Fed. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke said interest rates will likely stay low for a long time. Bernanke was on Capitol Hill this morning, and he told lawmakers the job market is still too weak to raise rates.
Of particular concern because of its long-term implications for worker skills and wages is the increasing incidence of long-term unemployment. Indeed, more than 40% of the unemployed have been out of work for 6 months or more, nearly double the share of a year ago.
To put the economic news in a more global context, we called David Wessel. He is economics editor of the Wall Street Journal and a regular guest on this program. Good morning.
Good morning, Renee.
So, David, cast your gaze across the globe and give us a snapshot of how the world is doing economically.
Well, in Asia, the recovery is surprisingly strong. Asia is just leaping out of the starting blocks. Taiwan's economy grew 18% in the fourth quarter at an annual rate. Thailand's at 15%. In Europe, it's not nearly as good. Europe is growing very slowly, barely at all. In Germany, we were told today, in the fourth quarter, the German economy didn't grow at all, and it would have shrunk if it hadn't been able to export a lot more to other places. The U.S. is somewhere in the middle.
Well, let's go back where you began and talk about Asia. How is it that it's doing so well?
Really, the good news about Asia is that if you're a neighbor of China, you have a strong market. The Chinese economy is benefiting from this huge dose of fiscal stimulus that they applied. In fact, it's doing so well that the Chinese central bank is trying to put on the brakes by getting the banks to lend a little less readily. And that's spreading to the rest of Asia. But in Asian countries around China, there's a lot of consumer demand, people taking trips, buying cars, and so forth. So that's propelling their economies forward at a time when the rest of the world is still in a funk.
And we've been hearing a lot about Europe, especially Greece of late. And as small as Greece's economy is, it seems to be having big repercussions, or at least that's the fear.
Right. Growth is much slower all across Europe. The abilities of the Greek government to manage its budget and its debts has cast a shadow over the whole 16-country region that shares the single currency, the euro. And so that's raised interest rates that some of the other countries have to pay when they borrow, like Spain. They have very high unemployment. Their banks haven't yet come clean and dealt with all the problems that were caused by the financial crisis. And there just doesn't seem to be much oomph in the European economy. So they're relying on exporting to the rest of the world. And that's why they're so happy that the euro has started to fall, because the only benefit of that to them is it makes their exports cheaper.
Okay, bring us back to the U.S. How are we doing right at this moment, this morning?
Well, we're doing better. We're not growing nearly as fast as Asia, but we're doing much better than Europe. U.S. banks are much farther along in the repair process, but of course, they're not lending very much. We learned yesterday that bank lending in the U.S. has fallen very precipitously, and unemployment remains stubbornly high and shows no signs of coming down quickly. So we're doing better, but we're not doing great.
So let's bring our little overview here to an end by talking about the Fed. The Federal Reserve has a policy of ultra-low interest rate, has for some time. Where does that leave? Where does all this that you've just said leave the Fed?
Well, the Fed thinks that the economy is a little healthier and healthy enough so they can end some of their emergency lending programs that they put in during the crisis. But it's not healthy enough to raise short-term interest rates from the near zero level where they are or to drain some of the trillions of dollars they've pumped into the economy. Their latest forecast shows that they expect unemployment to remain high, above 8% through 2011. They see very little upward pressure on inflation. So I think they're trying to convince everybody that they are prepared to turn the credit spigot when the time comes, but that time isn't here yet. It's at least 6 or 8 months away.
David, always a pleasure to talk with you.
You're welcome, Renee.
David Wessel is economics editor of the Wall Street Journal.
ABC News will be covering the California governor's race with a shrunken staff. Network executives say that economic pressures on the news industry are forcing them to shed up to 25% of the news staff of the news source that I grew up watching. As NPR's David Folkenflik reports, ABC says it intends to use the cuts to reinvent itself.
ABC News President David Westin says it's a new digital day.
We're looking to use what technology has made possible in recent months and years to fundamentally transform the way we both gather the news and produce the news.
But he readily acknowledges another point, too.
And yes, do it with fewer people and at a reduced cost.
And there you have it. ABC News is offering voluntary buyout packages to hundreds of journalists, hoping to reduce staff by up to a quarter of its 1,400-person workforce. The pressures aren't all that new. Cable and the web have hurt old-line news outlets. ABC's World News still draws about 8 million viewers a night, second only to NBC Nightly News, but that's down a lot from what it used to be. So advertising revenues were hurt even before the current recession. David Westin.
ABC News has kept its head above water, but sometimes just barely so. And looking out in the future, I was very concerned, and particularly last year in a down advertising year, it drove home the concern that we were a bit precarious. And part of my job is to make sure that we are a robust, successful news organization going well out into the future.
Some of the changes won't be noticed by many viewers. For instance, the weekend editions of Good Morning America and World News have been folded into their weekday counterparts under a single executive. But ABC is also placing great emphasis on new digital platforms. Producers should be able to edit and transmit footage from the field. Reporters should learn how to shoot using new compact digital cameras. ABC has already experimented with that model using younger digital reporters scattered across the globe. And Westin promises quality will be preserved. He points to the resurrection of Nightline in the ratings after it embraced a quicker-paced format and a more nimble approach to reporting stories with digital cameras.
That's exactly what I'd expect him to say.
Bob Zelnick was a correspondent based in Moscow and Tel Aviv for ABC News, and he also covered the Pentagon. He's been critical of the big networks for what he says is a liberal bias. But he says that slant is far outweighed by a proud tradition of covering the big stories, like the civil rights movement, the Vietnam War, and the fall of communism. Zelnick says knowledge and skill will necessarily be lost.
When you do this, when you cut back on staff and start to cut down on your correspondent corps, which is probably the next step in this, it's like a marooned person trying to sustain himself by eating his own flesh.
But digital news guru Mark Glazer of PBS says the network's survival depends on making the significant transformation outlined by Westin yesterday.
A lot of other organizations have paid a lot of lip service and said, okay, we're going to do mobile content, we're going to have digital journalists, we're going to have mobile journalists, we're going to try all these things. But, you know, it just depends on how much, you know, they really are going to make it an institution-wide change.
Glazer says the erosion of audiences is testing the very viability of the network news model.
This is definitely a sink or swim evolutionary kind of moment where, You know, it's evolve or die.
That's an assessment that Weston didn't really duck yesterday when asked about pressures from ABC's corporate owners.
You know, it's funny. The folks in Los Angeles at Disney are very powerful people, but the forces we're dealing with here are actually more powerful even than they are.
The buyouts are not offered to correspondents and anchors working under personal services contracts, but executives say they will take a harder look as those contracts expire. David Folkenflik, NPR News, New York.
The U.S. economy is improving. That word today from Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke, speaking before a congressional committee. But there are still areas of weakness, especially in the job market. Bernanke also said that with inflation tame, the Fed is likely to keep interest rates low for an extended period. And Bernanke's words sent stock prices rising. NPR's Jim Zaroli reports.
This was Bernanke's first trip to Capitol Hill since his reappointment battle last month, when he took heat over the way the Fed had handled the big bank bailout. This time, the atmosphere was less contentious. He appeared before the House Financial Services Committee to give his semi-annual assessment of economic conditions. Bernanke said the economy continues to improve. There was no talk of a double-dip recession.
Indeed, the U.S. economy expanded at about a 4% annual rate during the second half of last year.
But Bernanke said the rebound was due in part to what economists call an inventory correction. Businesses that let their supply of products dwindle during the downturn are now restocking their shelves. If the rebound is really to last, Bernanke said, consumers will have to start buying more.
A sustained recovery will depend on continued growth in private sector final demand for goods and services.
There already has been some pickup in consumer spending, he said, and business investment is up significantly. But demand won't really take off until the job market improves. And right now, it's still very weak. Bernanke said he's especially concerned about the growing number of people who remain unemployed for long periods.
Indeed, more than 40% of the unemployed have been out of work for 6 months or more, nearly double the share of a year ago.
And then there's the credit problem. Bernanke said big banks seem to be doing a lot better, but small businesses are having considerable trouble getting credit. Yet for all the problems he cited, Bernanke sounded, on the whole, surprisingly optimistic, says Mark Vittner, chief economist at Wells Fargo.
He seems to be fairly upbeat about what we're seeing in the manufacturing sector, even noting that the manufacturing sector is leading the economic recovery. But a little more downbeat about other parts of the economy, still acknowledging big problems in commercial real estate and ongoing struggles in the housing industry.
Bernanke spoke at length about the Fed's efforts to unwind some of the extraordinary measures it has taken to prop up the economy. Since last year, for instance, the Fed has been buying up mortgage-backed securities as a way of pumping money into the housing market. It will stop doing so next month. That's raised concern in some quarters that mortgage rates could rise, but it hasn't happened so far. And Bernanke said the Fed would be watching the situation carefully, but he suggested that the impact of the unwinding will probably be mild.
These adjustments are not expected to lead to tighter financial conditions for households and businesses and should not be interpreted as signaling any change in the outlook for monetary policy.
In fact, he said the Fed plans to keep the interest rates it controls at historically low levels for an extended period of time. It can do that because there's virtually no sign of inflation. Bernanke was asked several times about the growing federal budget deficit. At one point, he conceded that addressing the deficit would probably be good for the economy. Bond markets want to know that the trajectory of bigger and bigger deficits will end.
It would be very helpful, even to the current recovery, to markets' confidence, if there were a sustainable, credible plan for a fiscal exit, if you will.
But for the most part, he demurred. Early on, committee chairman Barney Frank asked whether concern about the deficit should trump all other government priorities, like passing another stimulus package, something many Democrats advocate. Bernanke dodged the question, saying only, "There are difficult trade-offs that have to be made." Jim Zaroli, NPR News.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News.